The Tortured Poets Department, the anthology on CD and vinyl, and the official Eras Tour book, available at Target starting November 29th.
Only at Target.
The following program is sponsored by What's Right, What's Left Ministries, and is responsible for its content.
Portions of the following program may be pre-recorded.
I am Pastor Ernie Sanders, the voice of the Christian resistance. Stay tuned. My radio broadcast, What's Right, What's Left, is coming up right now.
Independence, Ohio.
Changed our life for the better in many different ways.
Heard around the world every Monday through Friday.
Pastor Sanders is always years ahead of the rest of the media, telling you exactly what they're covering up.
This is What's Right, What's Left.
I tune in every chance I get to hear exactly what's going on with the voice of the Christian resistance.
Unabashedly cutting through the rhetoric by exposing the hard topics facing our society and world.
A lot of the other news media don't pick up the news items like he does.
And bringing to light the enemy of freedom who are out to steal your rights, your children, and enslaving you.
You really get the truth out. I can tune into your show and hear the unvarnished truth. Thank you.
This is What's Right, What's Left with Pastor Ernie Sanders.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of What's Right, What's Left on this 20th day of November 2024. That's right. And tonight we have this is Pledge Week. And so I'm going to give you those numbers right out of the chute. 888-281-1110 and 888-677-9673. So the phone lines are already open. And tonight there, our producer is that rising media mogul, none other than Style. Hey, Style.
Hey, how are you, Pastor?
There you go. And here live in the studio, she's got a stutter and a flutter. The studio marv, none other than the cackle herself. Go ahead, cackle.
Good evening, everyone.
Little Lisa. There you go. And we have sitting in here live with me, Elder Randall Barkley. Hey, Elder.
Good evening. Let not your heart be troubled. God is in control. And, Pastor, I'm starting out tonight with $100.
Wow, there you go. Elder Barkley starts out with $100. And I can say this already too, Miss. Let me see, where'd it go? Here you go, Miss Wendy. Starts off with $420. Hey, and speaking of Miss Wendy, hey Wendy, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, I got your thing. So, there you go. We're off to a good start. Keep it coming, folks. Keep it coming. We really need to stay on all those stations you're listening to us on tonight. And so we better get right into the program because we have a whole lot to cover tonight. So with that, the title of the message was, Will a Man Rob God? Will a Man Rob God? We're talking about tithing, and this is a good way to talk about tithing, right, during this Pledge Week. And so I'm just going to do a recap. We're in Malachi chapter 3, Wendy.
Okay.
And in Malachi chapter 3, starting in verse 6, for I am the Lord, I change not, okay? So he's saying he's immutable, huh?
Right.
And if you're immutable, you do the same things the same way every time, right?
Yes.
Does God get it right every time?
Oh,
that's,
yeah.
Then why change, right? All right. I change not, therefore you sons of Jacob are not consumed. Ooh, what do you think he means by that?
I don't know.
Well, how about if he had a covenant that he would keep a remnant, right?
Yes.
I think if you go over in Romans chapter 11, it talks about that, it explains that, really. Even from the days of your fathers, you are gone away from mine ordinances, and have not kept them, return unto me, and I will return unto you, saith the Lord of hosts, that you said, now, these guys aren't real smart. I mean, you got to say, these are the leaders there, the priests and that. They're not real smart guys because they start out over there in Malachi chapter 1, where he was telling them, because the sacrifices that he's told him, he wanted nothing to do with the sacrifices. They were phony. They weren't for real, okay? In fact, he gave them some bad news. And the bad news was, you see, when you came to bring your sacrifice into the temple, the animals were kept outside the gate, okay? And you know what animals do after they eat?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, he's telling them, these guys, that they were going to end up buried up to their face in dung. Mm. That's where they were going to end up out there because of their disobedience. So now, but you said, wherein shall we return? So what are you talking about? God, from what? What have we done wrong, right?
Mm-hmm.
Will a man rob God? Yet you have robbed me. But you say, wherein have we robbed thee? He says, in tithes and offerings, mm-hmm. Okay? What were those tithes and offerings supposed to do? They were supposed to take care of the priests in the temple, right?
Right.
That's how they ate, right? Mm-hmm. No tithes and offering. Can you rob God? I mean, first of all, Wendy, do you think God needs our money?
No, he does not.
He doesn't need her money, does he? No. So when it comes to tithing, who benefits the most, God or us by showing our faith in the Lord?
That would definitely be us.
That's right, because does God need any crowns in heaven?
No.
No.
We do, don't we?
Yeah.
And so it's us that benefits, not God, by tithing. And
right.
So here he says, you are cursed with a curse, for you have robbed me, even this whole nation. And, well, you know, what did he do? He would curse them. He would take away the blessings that he had for them. When they tried to rob him, they ended up robbing themselves, huh?
Absolutely.
Is that the way it happens today, too? There are people out there that refuse to tithe. They won't tithe, okay? And I'm telling them, listen, you better understand. If you're going to take anyone serious, if you're going to believe anything anyone says, you better believe what God says, right?
Right.
Okay? And so you're an absolute fool if you refuse to obey God. God said you're a fool, right? And so he says here, bring you all the tithes. Let's go back to verse 8. Will a man rob God? Let's go for a minute. I want to jump over to Nehemiah chapter 13. Nehemiah chapter 13, real quick. Verses 10 through 14. And I perceived that the portions of the Levites had not been given. See, this is what he's referring to. This is Malachi's prophecy was given during the days of Nehemiah at his second stay in Jerusalem, and this is where what he's referring to right here. And I perceived the portions of the Levites had not been given them, for the Levites and the singers that did work were fled everyone to his own field. Then contended I with the rulers and said, why is the house of God forsaken? And I gathered them together and set them in their place. Then brought all of Judah, the tithe of the corn and the new wine and the oil unto the treasuries. And I made treasurers over the treasuries. Shemaiah the priest, Zadok the scribe, and of the Levites, Bediah, and next to them was Hanan, the son of Zidkar, the son of Mattaniah, for they were counted faithful, and their office was to distribute unto their brethren. Remember me, O God, concerning this, and wipe not out my good deeds that I have done for the house of my God, and for the offices thereof. Okay. And so here, what he's saying, when he's talking about wiping out the good deeds, that's not a salvation issue. What it is a, it's like a Bema Seed issue. It's a rewards issue here. And here, so he's saying, Lord, don't take away any of my rewards in heaven, because I have done what everything I expected that I thought you wanted me to do. So then he's saying back over here where we're at, going back to verse 10, he's making a point that when you fail in verse 9, then the house of God is forsaken. And so now God is telling him in verse 10 of Malachi 3, bring you all the tithes into the storehouse, and there may be meat in mine house, and prove me now, therefore, saith the Lord of hosts, if I will not open to you the windows of heaven and pour you out a blessing, and there shall not be room enough to receive it. Can anybody ever outgive God?
Absolutely not.
No, because it all belongs to him anyhow, huh?
Right.
Okay. So that we don't own anything. We have use of things.
Right.
But to actually own something, you got to be able to take it with you when you leave this world. And there's not much we can take with us when we leave this world, right?
That's right.
Hey, Pastor, I got a question. Israel sometimes would ask the Lord when, I guess, they would do battle, and they would ask the Lord if they could have the spoil. What were the conditions for getting the spoil?
Obedience to God.
Okay.
Whenever they went into battle, God gives you the wars, the rules of warfare there, but it was obedience to God. It was, you know, so if God tells you to go in there and you're up against 50,000 and you only have 20,000 and he tells you get rid of 19, just listen to it, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Because God knows what he's doing, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so if you your faith and your trust in obedience, and then God always provides. And that was the spoils in those days, yeah. He goes on to say, and I will rebuke the devourer for your sakes, and he shall not destroy the fruits of your ground. Whither shall your vine cast her fruit before the time in the field, saith the Lord of hosts? In other words, he's saying, look, I'll tell Satan to stand down. You know, because God allowed, he used Satan to punish people for their sins, for their rebellion, okay? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Satan was, you know, hey, how about this? You know, these people have been pretty bad. You got to let me have them. Look, come on. What are you going to, you know? And God would allow the devourer to punish the wicked, right? But in this case, he's saying, listen, if you're obedient to me, I'll make him stand down. You know? And so then he goes on to say here, and all the nations shall call you blessed, for you shall be a delightsome land, saith the Lord of hosts. Now here's where these guys really get dumb, okay, right here. And this is kind of like today, the mindset in the prosperity church and the apostate church out there today in the government. Now, listen to this, okay? Your words have been stout against me, saith the Lord, yet you say, what have we spoken so much against thee? They're arguing with God. See, here's how every argument with God has always worked. You lose, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
It works that way. Now here, you have said it is vain to serve God, and what profit is it that we have kept his ordinances and that we have walked mournfully before the Lord of hosts? Okay. Now you see, they don't realize that when they're communicating one to another, God's listening in. See, he's in other conversation. They just don't know it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now we call the proud happy, yea, They that work wickedness are set up, yea, and they that tempt God are even delivered. So they're telling God, look, God, we're hip, we're woke, you see. We get it. Look, we see what you're doing. You're telling us, blessed are the poor, blessed are the meek. But we're watching, see, we're seeing that you're rewarding the wicked. We're seeing you're making the wicked rich, and the heck with these poor people, right? We don't want any part of that, right? Is it smart to tell God he's a hypocrite?
Yeah, right now, yeah. Not good.
That might offend him, huh?
Yeah, that's foolish.
It's not good to offend God, right?
That's right.
And that's what they did. And it cost them, okay? Hmm. Then they that feared the Lord spake often one to another, and the Lord hearkened and heard it. And the book of remembrance was written before him for them that feared the Lord, and that thought upon his name. And they shall be mine, saith the Lord of hosts, in that day when I make up my jewels, and I will spare them as a man spareth his own son that serveth him. Then shall ye return and discern between the righteous and the wicked, between him that serveth God and him that serveth him not. Mm. And so here we have, there's seven books the Bible speaks. I'm not talking about the six books. In that, they refer to seven different books in the Bible, okay? Mm-hmm. One of them, here is the book of remembrance. You got the book of remembrance, the book of war, mm-hmm. The book of the law. You've got the book of life. You got the book of the living. So altogether, you got several different books that the Bible speaks of that's referred to, okay, in here. And so here, the book of remembrance. Then they that fear the Lord spake one to another, and the Lord hearkened and heard it, and the book of remembrance was written. When do we speak one to another? When is it that Christians, that believers, get together and speak one to another?
Usually at church.
Church service, in prayer meetings, in prayer meetings, okay? Mm-hmm. In Bible studies, should we put a lot of importance on prayer meetings?
Oh, absolutely. Prayer is powerful.
How often are we to pray?
Hopefully every day.
Without ceasing,
without
huh?
Without ceasing, yeah.
Without ceasing. Does that mean that we pray all during the day, right?
Yeah.
So God's listening 24/7, isn't mm-hmm. he? Okay.
Yeah, he is.
Smart people know that, right?
Yeah.
I got another question.
Wait a minute. I got to give out this number first. Ready? Because people have got a call here. And we have Bill in Boston has pledged 100. Thank you, Bill. 888-281-1110. That's the credit card line. Or 888-677-9673. Wendy's going to ask a question. She's pretty smart, so it'll be a good question. Go ahead, Wendy.
Well, in chapter 2 of Malachi, he's warning, you know, don't deal treacherously
with your wives.
With the wife, yes. Yeah, so what does God consider treacherously with regard to spousal stuff?
Well, what they did is they took the laws that they were given and they abused them, right? In other words, what was happening for divorce, for example, these guys would take and, you know, they could divorce their wives if they burnt the dinner. And what would happen, sometimes they would mistreat their wives. When time came for the plowing time, some of those guys would actually trade their wives for a team of oxen until after the plowing was done and then trade back, okay? And they allowed this. Others, what would happen when a man... If a man was killed and left a wife and children, or just a wife, if he had a brother, his brother was to take his wife to marry her, because you see what happens if she didn't have a man as was someone to have like a covering over her, then anybody that could come along, if let's just say that you were out there, you were a widow, and I come along and I say, where's your husband? And you say, I don't have a husband. Where's your brother? I don't have a brother. Where's your father? Well, he's around here somewhere. You see, they would just take that woman. See, you now, I'm claiming you, and you belong to me. And the woman really didn't have a right. It's, unless they had a man there to stand up for their honor.
Yeah. For them, yeah.
And so that was one of the things that they mistreated them. Not only that, but what they would do is often, divorce one of the older women if she got old and marry and bring in a new one. And then they started taking multiple wives, and they weren't, if they didn't take care of their brother's wife, let's say a brother died, and they had, what they would do is they would go to the temple on the steps of the temple. She would untie his shoelaces and spit upon him. And then he was free of the responsibility of taking care of her. Now, if a man left a wife and a son, the brother was to marry the wife, and whatever he gained, that his share, that wife's share of that son, whatever property that son had going in stayed with him, belonged to him. Whatever property the widow had belonged to that son, and whatever he gained on his own belonged to him too. So the very specific, God had very, very specific and very, very honest laws, people that you would deal by. Okay, so he'd live by rather. So anyhow, that's what he was talking about here when he says there in Malachi 2, the tears of your wives of your youth upon the altar. God was hearing them, and he was telling them, you better start treating these women, these wives of your youth, you better start treating them like women and not abusing them. And so he made it pretty clear to them. He let them know very clearly, Wendy, that he was listening, okay?
Yeah.
And he was watching. So there you go. Tony in Canada pledges $150. Thank you, Tony. Stephen in Oklahoma pledges $100. Thank you, Stephen. All right. And so, do you have any other questions? That was a good one.
Yeah, I was just wondering, in that time frame, did women own property, or was it always just the men that owned property?
Well, usually the women, the wife became the property of her husband.
If a couple only had daughters and they got married, the wealth of her parents, where'd the wealth of the parents go?
Well, they would leave the wealth would be given to the daughters, and the daughters would have, unless until he married them off. The idea was with the daughters was to marry them off, and they had what you call a dowry. And so they had to bring their dowry with them.
It's almost like that's what, the British kind of did, for a while. You know, the women didn't inherit, it was always down through the male side of the family.
Yeah. Well, that's the way it worked. And some people, like now, Jacob didn't. He got a raw deal. He wanted to, instead of giving the lady, the wife he wanted, he had to marry her sister first. And, so he worked 7 years, and that 7 years then to marry Rebecca. What happened? He ended up with her sister, and he had to work another 7 years. And the sister wasn't very pretty.
Yeah, lay.
That's so. What do you think of that, Wendy?
Yeah, I think the way the story goes, the sister was very fertile and had children, but Rebecca did not, not for a while.
Yep, you're right.
Yeah.
She didn't. But they worked it all out.
Yeah.
All righty. We're going to play a little clip here, and then we want your thoughts on this little clip we're going to play here, because there's something happening that's out all over the internet now, but go, and we'll explain that, but go ahead and play the clip.
But the GN1 is very, very alarming because the mutations are no longer restricted to spike protein, which indicates enhanced activity of CTLs to diminish viral infectiousness. And that CTL activity is responsible for the decline of T cells that in fact boost the non-neutralizing antibodies that prevent virulence. So that is what I've been predicting all the time, that ultimately this evolution would inevitably lead to the emergence of a highly virulent variant that would cause waves of hospitalization and severe disease in highly vaccinated countries. Of course, always the same, only in highly vaccinated countries, right?
So well, that's a relief. So what you're saying is that you ain't seen nothing yet, and this is just act one, and prepare for act two, which is going to be more people infected. And so do you believe that what's coming up is are more deaths? I mean, certainly more infections, but do you predict like twice as many deaths, three times as many deaths as before? Like what, can you quantify what you think is going to happen?
I hate to do this, Steve, but I'm...
That's okay.
No. But I mean, of course, I cannot, it's not because I'm afraid of figures. It's just that I'm afraid to say that, in my humble opinion, what we will see is something completely, completely unprecedented in terms of the magnitude of the wave of morbidity and unfortunately, mortality that we will see. And...
But quantify that for me. 10 times, 5 times, 3 times, 20 times?
Yeah, from what we have seen right now, well, I mean, I would rather say that in some of these highly vaccinated populations, depending, of course, on age and a little bit depending on vaccine coverage and on the speed of the vaccination, but would not be surprised that we will be dealing with a serious decimation of the population. In some populations, maybe up to 30-40%.
Alrighty, here's what's happening. I'll tell you very quickly, Wendy, and then we'll get into you. Here's what's been up on the internet. What's up on the internet is they're saying here, chilling warning from Cleveland Clinic. Wave of mass deaths will wipe out COVID vaxxed within 5 years. Mm. Now, here I'm in this article, and this article is supposed to be on Before It's News, beforeitsnews.com. Now, we went to that news site and we couldn't find this article on there. Okay. Now, also, here they're telling you they quote as the world renowned Cleveland Clinic, but here's what it says: the prestigious Cleveland Clinic has issued a chilling warning of an incoming wave of deaths that kill off huge numbers of people who receive COVID mRNA vaccines. But we could not find, and this is a long article. And they keep saying, according to Cleveland Clinic, mass mortality is expected. But I can't find anywhere where anybody from Cleveland Clinics gives any validity to this. In other words, there's no one, no person, no name that is verifying that this actually came from the Cleveland Clinic. So, but now hear what you, the who you just listened to was a very well-known scientist in immunology named Garrett Bosch. He's for real. That's for real, what you just listened to. Now, there's another who's a world-renowned scientist in immunology, and that is Dolores Cahill. Dolores Cahill. And she also had, well, something very similar to say. I think we're going to pick this up. We're going to research this. In fact, she actually went into it a little deeper, and we're going to research this more, try to get to the bottom of this, because she's for real too, okay? So what they said was for real, but, and of course, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny said that on this radio program over 3 years ago. So,
and so, so what you're saying is people that got the serum in 2020, 2021, 2022, they're expecting mass die-off within 5 years of getting it?
They're saying that everyone who took the shot, even if it's the first shot, just one shot, are going to die. Now, I know since then there's been a lot of remedies. A lot of people have come out with ways of treating that, of ridding the body. One of the things are those, what is it, nicotine patches that people are wearing?
Right.
They claim that absorbs that. You had a kit, but your kit, you had to take it right away after you took the shot, which is too late for most people. Most people out there today, you know, I had talked to several people from the Cleveland Clinic, and they don't want anything to do with these shots anymore. Nothing to do with them at all, okay? Which we tried to tell people. Remember, Wendy?
Yeah.
You came on here 3 weeks before the first person took the very first shot, and you told everybody right on here, don't take it. It's not a vaccine. All the test animals died. Remember?
Yeah. I mean, that's usually, you know, the clinical test phase is for usually animals, and then if that goes well, then you can move into the human, but they kind of just moved into the human anyway. So, yeah, a lot of your gold standard rules apparently in science are, you know, kind of not being adhered to.
Well, you know, these two are saying, look, you're going to die if you took the shot, but like I said, well, maybe we should play this other clip here. Play the second one. Play Dolores Cahill, Dr. Cahill, and see what you think, Wendy.
Wow. Somehow, talking to you scares me, right? Because I know a lot of people who are being vaccinated. Is there a way out?
Everybody who has an mRNA injection will die within 3 to 5 years, even if they have only one injection. And I know that is hard to hear, but I think this is why we need to, you know, be honest and tell people, because these trials are the most dangerous clinical trials ever.
Okay, now that we know that's true. We know that's true, that they are the most dangerous trials ever we've had. But I believe that there's ways that you can detox from this. What do you think, Wendy?
Well, I mean, what you were talking about, the nicotine patches, that was kind of a something that a team of doctors during the pandemic came up with, because they had, from what I recall, they had a group of patients that were not doing well and they were on ventilators, and they happened to notice something. These were all former smokers. That was interesting to them. Then they started looking at patients that they knew that were smokers, and they didn't come down with COVID. So they go, what's with that? You know, so they looked into it further. And so they said, well, we've got smokers that don't seem to get COVID. Then we've got non-smokers or smokers who quit that get COVID. What's the chances that if we put a nicotine patch on these folks that, you know, they recover? So they tried it. And within 10 days, they recovered and left the hospital and went home. So they looked into it further, and they said something about the nicotine disrupts the manufacturing, because it turns your body into this manufacturing hub for the spike protein. So they said something about the nicotine stops that process, and people are able to recover. One doctor, I was real impressed, though, he said that if you don't want to use nicotine patches, he said an herb called lobelia has an alkaloid that mimics nicotine called lobeline, and he suggested you could use that as well. So I was like, wow. So lobelia is a plant God gave us, has 16 alkaloids in it, and apparently it can help with this, according to him.
I knew you'd have a good answer. Randall here didn't know anything about that. All right, there you go.
Learn something new every day.
All right. Go ahead and enlighten us more. You always have an interesting subject, so tell us, enlighten us further.
Yeah, I came across some research I thought it really just piqued my interest. It was called the Jekyll and Hyde world. Most of us are familiar with the story about the two-sided personality, Jekyll and Hyde. You know, it was in books, mystery novels. It's been on, you know, radio, TV shows. You know, it's kind of like the good cop, bad cop thing. But more people that we even live or work with seem to be, according to research, manifesting this type of behavior disorder. So in less than one generation, they're saying more people are displaying bizarre behavior, especially in the workplace, creating very stressful environments. So this was a November 2024 study by Stevens Institute of Technology in Hoboken, New Jersey, and they reported and they published their findings in the Journal of Applied Psychology that more work supervisors seem to be swinging between good and bad personality traits. And the research was they conducted using surveys about 650 full-time employees in the United States and the U.K., over in Europe, and according to their findings, the stability of the workplace is at risk when supervisors with personality disorders are managing employees. So it creates a work atmosphere where the employees really don't know what to expect on a daily basis from their boss. It creates kind of like that walking on eggshells response. And the report did refer to this as an abusive boss syndrome. Now, the boss behavior is described as a round of abuse that's later followed with what they described as a love bomb to somehow negate the abuse from earlier. So what...
That happens here in the studio every now and then.
Don't talk about me like that.
No, I got to tell you this real quickly. I got to give that number out because it's pledge week. 888-281-1110 or 888-677-9673. We got us a B&B in Cleveland, pledge 400. L pledge 20. T pledge 50. And Rose in New York pledges 100. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I'm sorry, Wendy, go ahead.
Okay. No, it just creates this roller coaster environment. And it's similar to, you know, people with bipolar disorder or other antisocial personality type of traits. Now, some people really should never be a supervisor or a manager of employees. And the results, according to the research, said that there's low employee morale, low job performance, high absenteeism, high sick days, high turnover, an increased cost in employee training, and also a negative business rating. So when people, like, work there, quit, they go up online, and they really give a negative business rating for working for that company. According to the Journal of Applied Psychology, they said when work leaders lurch unpredictably between good and bad behavior, it creates a work environment of uneasiness and stress. They said we're seeing that leaders who swing back and forth between abusive and ethical leadership do even more damage to employees, and it turns out that reverting to the ethical behavior style really doesn't magically fix or erase the impact of the bad behavior, and in some instances actually makes things worse. And my response to that when I read that was, duh. You know, what would you expect? Of course it makes things worse, because you have a supervisor or you know, a manager who's a complete whack job. That's the only way to describe it. This isn't a manager that expects a lot of you and then yells at you when you mess up. With a Jekyll and Hyde personality trait, people don't know where they stand, what to expect, and at any moment there could be this big boss bomb that explodes with no explanation. And it's kind of hard on employees and their nervous system. So this environment makes the job much more difficult, stressful, lowers immune system, so employees get sick more often. And people with financial choices, well, they don't stay at those jobs. They quit. So the water cooler talk at places like this would be betting in the morning on which personality is going to walk through that door that morning. And how awful of that. That is really workplace abuse. Now, according to one of the professors in the study at Stevens School of Business, Dr. Zhu, he says, if you're constantly guessing which boss will turn up, the good cop or the bad cop, then you are winding up with emotional exhaustion, feeling demoralized and unable to work to your full potential. And according to this professor, he says, if such leadership is extended up the chain, where a supervisor's boss is the Jekyll and Hyde personality, and the rift extends actually down the chain to employees that are really not working directly with that abusive boss, the ethical leadership of the business comes into question, where the employees are uncertain about their future, if the company is going to be around much longer, if their career is going to, you know, be there. So the bad behavior erodes confidence in the staff. And if you think about it, the same can happen in politics, where people view their political leaders as having a few screws loose, behaving badly and negatively impacting a nation.
You know what? You know who comes? The very first name that comes to my mind is Kamala Harris. She could not keep a staff.
Exactly.
She would. Some of her staff people actually came out and said that only the upper, you know, the upper level staff members could look her in the eye when she came in. She demanded that none of the lower level staff could look her in the eye. They had to, as they talked to her, they had to look down, not look her in the eye.
Yeah, she was a very demoralizing person. She's. You know, that whole thing about the power of my pen, she is sadistic.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, according to your surveys of adult Americans, workplace stress is risen significantly, and the stress can be so bad that people are unable to relax, their muscles get tense, they remain tense, their arteries and veins are stressed, their mind is under stress and anxiety, and this is frequent, you know, because let's say, Pastor, let's say you're driving to work and you got to face that rush hour and it's very stressful rush hour. It'll take you over 20 to 30 minutes once you get to work for your body to relax enough where your muscles stop being tense. So people that work in an atmosphere of this all day long and not knowing what's going to happen the next 10 minutes, they never relax. So count yourself lucky out there if you have coworkers and supervisors that are good-natured. Now, Pastor, I once worked briefly at a law firm doing clerical work and on a summer break from college, and there were two supervisors there. This came to mind. One was the good cop, one was the bad cop. It was weird. But there were instances there on occasion where the bad cop supervisor would come into my office at my desk and wanted to see if I was done finishing on the work that I was given. And on one occasion, I said I was almost done. I was working on it on the computer screen. So this person walks around the desk, stands half behind my chair to my right, and bends down as if to look at the computer screen, but he wasn't really interested in that. I could feel his breath on my head. It was an intimidation tactic. So he was pushing those boundaries of proper space etiquette. Very uncomfortable, very creepy feeling. So, you know, if you're working in environments like that, people are going to, you know, it's going to show in their health. Their immune system is going to take a hit, and stress will lower your immunity. So that's why God gave us some herbs, right, Pastor, for healing of the nations and helping us out. And there's even some herbs to help us with tension and stress. So people have options out there.
Well, tell us about those herbs to help with tension and stress.
Well, one of my favorites is valerian root, and valerian root takes tension out of the nervous system without sedating you. It's almost like you give your immune system a nice big sigh of relief. I think it works better in a liquid form rather than a capsule or tablet form. The other herb is lobelia. We were mentioning that earlier. It takes tension out of muscular system, so it relaxes the muscles, but you're still coordinated. So with either one of these herbs, you can still drive a car and that kind of thing. You could actually use, I've used both because they work on two different systems, so I've used both. So those are also going to help improve sleep.
I might need some of those if they keep preempting me for ball games here.
Yeah.
And they're going to need them, too.
Yeah, because without sleep, you know, then, again, more stress. Brain needs sleep. Your nervous system needs sleep. On stressful times, I've leaned on those herbs, and it really have helped me out. And we do have them at our website, The Power Herbs. So you can go under, we have a tab for that, under stress, anxiety, that kind of thing. So you can kind of look and see what's there.
I have just about everything that you make out there, and they work, and they all don't taste real good, but they work, okay?
And so your herbs tend to have bitter alkaloids. Confucius was known to say good medicine always tastes bitter, so the bitter ones are the ones that are the most powerful.
Well, he was right about that for sure. All right. Carmen in Connecticut pledges $125. Rose in New York pledges $100. Thank you. The numbers are 888-281-1110 or 888-677-9673. Look, I got to get this thing rolling tonight. So you know what I'm going to do?
What?
I'm going to put my money where my mouth is. Put me down for $1,000.
Mm. All right.
I want a challenge. I want to see if I can get me some challenges. We want to stay on all the programs we're on. And last night's program, yesterday's program, I think was really one of the best programs we've ever done here. It's we recapped just some of 50 years on the radio here, Wendy.
Mm. Wow, that's a long time.
Yeah, and I've got some CDs. Now, speaking of that, and for all the folks that are pledging for a pledge of $25 or more, Pastor Ernie Sanders, 50 years, exhilarating moments, untold challenges, and many stories in between. And we're still going with part one. We have six parts of this. In other words, there's 6 hours. And for over 50 years, folks, God has a sense of humor. He's put me in places and things that I never would have even thought of going there. You know, it's been a real journey, you know, here, because not only am I talking about this stuff on the air, but I live this stuff, you know. I went to Arkansas. I was up against 14 of the Dixie mobsters, okay, to try to run me out of there. I was involved in and facing off with corrupt judges in these courts. I exposed them. The Lucasville riots, when they tried to burn Luke down, they had the riots there. I was right in the middle of all of that stuff. All of these things happen over the years. Many. They're in this video. And so anyone with a donation of $25 or more, let us know. But you got to let us know you want the video, because we don't send it to you unless you want it. You see, a lot of people say, well, I didn't get my video. Well, did you ask us for it? No. Well, that's why you didn't get it, see, because we have to. We don't send them to you if you don't want them. So you got to make sure that that is, again, fight the fight. It's Pastor Sanders, 50 years, the video.
Hey, Pastor, that means I qualify for one of those.
Yeah, you're going to get one, absolutely. 888-281-1110. In fact, if we hang around another 50, you'll be in some of those. All right. Or 888-677-9673. Wendy, did you ever get yours?
No, I don't believe I did.
All right, we'll make sure. We'll make sure that you get one. I got to make sure Lisa knows to get her one. So, already. Yes.
Hey, Pastor, just going back to the video you just played on the upcoming, sad to say, deaths that we might see. One of the things that was brought to mind was what happened. There's an article going back in March of 2022, but it says America's frontline doctors produce a report going over a case in France where a multi-million dollar life insurance claim was denied because the victim dies from the COVID vaccine. The American Council of Life Insurers has announced that claims from COVID vaccine deaths may be denied in the United States. Now, of course, if you look it up on Google, it's going to be fact-checking and they're going to say it's false. But what that reminds me of is how these insurance companies, even right now, how they're denying all of the claims or a lot of the claims from the people that have suffered through hurricanes and various tragedies. I mean, you pay all of this money for insurance and then something happens and then they look for any kind of loophole to get out of paying you.
Yeah.
And so how that's going to affect what's coming up.
Well, you know, this is why I think the reason that President Trump knew that they were going to have this vaccine. He was surrounded. He was outnumbered, and they know it was coming. But he also knew this. He knew that as long as it was experimental, they couldn't, under the Constitution, force you to take it. Under the Constitution, the military could not really, but they did anyhow. They weren't constitutional. Force it upon his soldiers. Many soldiers quit. So Trump knew that he couldn't stop it. So this way, if you didn't want it, if you refused it, you could refuse it, okay? Now, we set out forms giving people religious objections to this, and they worked. Many, many people, you know, where they worked, they didn't have to do it because they used the religious objection to that. Mm-hmm. But you know what? So many people I know of took the shot and died so quickly afterwards. We have story after story after story after story, yeah, of that. And Wendy, you were right here at the very beginning with us telling folks, don't take it.
Yeah, and one thing I learned back in the 90s from Dr. Anthony Norris when I spoke to him, he was the former chief urologist of the FDA. He had told me when we had a conversation that this is before COVID, obviously, that vaccines will exploit your weakest genetic area. So he says that's why not everybody has the same side effect or response to a vaccine.
Absolutely. You're having a sale this week?
Yes, we are. We're doing a combo sale this year. We're having our Thanksgiving, Black Friday, Cyber Monday all wrapped up into one, and it's 30% off on orders of $75 or more. And this will run through the 2nd of December.
All right. That number is 866-229-3663. That's for Apothecary Herbs. 866-229-3663.
Yep. Yeah, you can go up on, it's up on the homepage at thepowerherbs.com. The coupon is there. They could use it over the phone or on an order form if they're writing and mailing in an order. So you can use it in any way.
We're coming up to our break right here. I know you're going to take off because you got to get your beauty sleep.
I do. I have an early morning, but I've enjoyed every moment with you people. I do love it.
You have a blessed, blessed Thanksgiving. You deserve one.
You as well. We'll talk real soon.
God bless you. We love you.
Love you too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, we're coming up to the break, and then when we come back, we're going to take a little look at, you know, we may be very, very close. President Trump says we're very close to a war. So we'll be back right after this. One.
Thank you for listening to What's Right, What's Left, the voice of the Christian resistance. To support this ministry, head to wrwl.org. That's wrwl.org. Mail your donations to What's Right, What's Left Ministries, 14781 Sperry Road, Newberry, Ohio, 44065. If you missed part of tonight's program, you can check out the podcast at thewordcleveland.com. thewordcleveland.com. Once again, thank you for listening and supporting What's Right, What's Left Ministries, the voice of the Christian resistance. Stay tuned. The second hour is coming up next.